January 1st, 1914, pilot Tony Janis flew across Tampa Bay. Now, this wasn't the beginning of aviation as we know it. That had happened about 10 years ago at Kitty Hawk. What was cool about Tony Janis's flight from St. Petersburg to Tampa at 10 a.m. on that morning in 1914 in a Benoit airboat was that he had a passenger who had pre-booked a ticket. This was the beginning of the aviation industry as we know it. The passenger industry. So it's one of St. Petersburg's many, many claim to fames. And this week there will be, in honor of this momentous event, a statue erected at the new St. Pete Pier showing the airboat, the pilot, the passenger, a tremendous wingspan. It is a massive statue. It is a beautiful thing. And I am here today with Mark Ayling, who is the sculptor, the fabricator, the man, the guy who created this thing. Hello, sir.
Hello. How are you doing, Bill?
I'm doing fine. We got you here, folks, the magic of audio. We're talking to Mark the day before the statue is installed because he's not going to have a minute to talk to us. So hopefully when you're hearing this, you're seeing pictures of it. And I can't stop to ask Mark these things. So we're going to ask him now. Give me some specs on this thing as far as size, weight. It's full size, right?
It is a full-scale replica. So we're talking approximately 45-foot wingspan. It's 26 feet long, I think, the fuselage is. And the highest point of the monument will be at right around 25 feet.
How much does it weigh?
Well, it's interesting. We have a little contest going on the exact weight of the piece, but it's approximately 16,000 pounds.
Okay, so we're not just throwing this in the back of a van and haul it down to the pier, I guess.
No. The logistics of this thing have been pretty involved.
Well, what's it made of? Let's start there.
So the airboat itself and the waveform are all stainless steel, 316 surgical grade stainless steel.
Are they hollow? I mean, how does that work exactly?
Well, you know, it's all structural members. So like the pylon is made out of 4-inch by 4-inch square tube that has a 3/8 inch wall. And the pylon is the truss component that holds the airboat up at about 10 to 12 feet. So everybody can see it from a long ways away and also to keep people from the urge to climb into the airplane.
It's a little high up.
Yeah, that's a goal.
Where did this project start? Was this with Flight 2014 and Will Michaels?
Absolutely, yeah. They put together a 501c3 and started raising funds. I think I had a conversation with them in the spring of 2014 about early budgeting and conceptual renderings and that kind of thing. So I've been playing around with this thing for almost 6 years now.
And they basically said, because 2014 was the, what do you call, centennial, the 100th anniversary.
Yeah.
So 2020 is just, hey, we got a new pier, let's do it now.
Yep.
Would have been nice to do it in 2014, I guess.
Sure, but funding, you know, was one of those things that played a huge role in it. It was all the fundraising was done privately by the 501c3 that Will and several others put together, and it took them a while to get all the money. So what they did was they worked with the city. All the funds were raised through this 501c3, and then the piece is being donated to the city of St. Petersburg. So that's a very efficient way to combine public and private resources.
So the city didn't have to like pony up any dough, really. Just we got a place you can put it.
The piece of property and the future maintenance, I believe, is their responsibility. Yeah. But Will speaks much more effectively to those kinds of concerns than I do. I was just hired to make the thing.
Yeah, well, that's what I want to talk with you about. Research must have been extensive. Did you know anything about this before you started down this road?
Very little. I had been here several years before I realized that Janis Landing was called Janis Landing after Tony Janis, the pilot. Then, you know, going to the History Museum and learning what a big deal it was. And I mean, it's amazing that right here in St. Pete, and this is, you know, credit to the original founding fathers of the city and the makers of the city who identified this as being a huge publicity opportunity and really a big deal, because commercial aviation has completely transformed the planet and our lives as we know it.
This was on the front of newspapers all around the country, probably all around the world.
Yeah, there's a famous photograph from the St. Pete Times.
So there's a famous photograph that went around. You're saying,
yeah, Tony waving to the camera on that first flight. And that's actually what we used as the primary inspiration for the piece. So the figures, they're bronze figures in the cockpit, and they are in that same position gesturing.
Of Tony Janus and his passenger was A.C. File, who was the former mayor of St. Petersburg.
Yeah, Abe File. And we did him up in period garb. He looks like a pretty cool cat.
Yeah.
Very Art Deco looking. You know, I'm happy with the way both the figures turned out, but he's a really cool looking cat. I like him.
You had to really delve into the history of this. I mean, you know, I wrote a story about it not long ago. And of course, I've been following what you've been doing. And I spoke with Will about it. But, you know, to do that story, you have to really learn the mechanics of what went into bringing and it was only here for a couple of months.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But I'm talking about the specs of the airship. You had to learn it. Could you build one in your sleep now?
I tell you what, between Alex, my designer, and I, we probably could. I think he's got 10 gigs of files and documentation on the development of the project. And we went to, you know, they've got a replica in the History Museum, and we documented that really thoroughly, took measurements and photographs. And then we also went out to the Fantasy of Flight Museum. They did a version of the Benoit that was researched really thoroughly by, I think, Kermit Weeks is his name. I hope I'm getting that correct. But they went out to the Smithsonian, and the original drawings for this particular model of Benoit are lost.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that.
It's been pieced together from photo documentation and drawings of other Benoit aircraft. Benoit was an aircraft manufacturer in 1914 that actually made a number of different models of airplanes.
And he was in St. Louis, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah, another St. Louis
there
connection.
We go. There you yeah, go. I knew that one. But you can say pretty close to the truth that it's almost exactly the way it looked as far as size, proportions, that
it's,
sort of thing.
It's as accurate as we could make it and still engineer it to withstand 155 mile an hour wind. So we're dealing with some challenges there in, you know, we wanted to stay as historically accurate as we could. And every version of it has some very subtle differences. And, you know, like the shape of the nose was one of those things that was really hard to get right. And we redesigned the nose probably a dozen different times to try and get it to look just right. One thing that we did, so for people who look at the piece, the original airplane was all wood and canvas,
yeah,
basically. And you know, we don't want this airplane to fly. So we use perforated metal to represent all the canvas. So there's canvas on the tail, canvas on the nose of the fuselage, and canvas on the wings.
Perforated, and that's perforated. So that the air can go through it.
Yeah, so we
so
don't actually create
take off.
Lift. Yeah. It's actually really, really, this part of that history stuff, you know, you start looking at airfoils and the kind of foil that they had, you know, that line of the wing.
Yeah.
They didn't completely understand how lift worked at that point in time. 10 years into aviation, it was like a cup. So the wing was a consistent thickness all the way across. And they thought that it was the cup shape that created the lift. They didn't understand
like
that
the
it's
the sail of a boat, maybe?
Yeah,
yeah.
That it's actually the length of the bottom side being shorter than the length of the top side that creates the lift in the airfoil. It took them, I think, you know, aviation buffs will correct me, but it was another 5 to 10 years before they really honed in on efficient foil. And that's when aviation went from two wings to one wing, when they really got the lift down.
This was an airboat, which, you know, for those of you, it's sort of like a seaplane in a way, in that it's a boat with wings on it, essentially.
Yeah.
Didn't have wheels.
No wheels, no wheels whatsoever.
And if I remember my history correctly, it slid down a greased ramp into the water.
Yep.
Tony cranks the engine. They go up to maybe, what, 10, 20 feet over the water
tops,
or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And landed in the Hillsborough River over there by the where the Lafayette Bridge is right now.
In fact, story is that they had some sort of mechanical challenge on the way over, and they had to land in the middle of the bay, and Tony's climbing around on the plane fixing the chain linkage and that kind of stuff, and then they took back off.
And I think it was 3 months, like the season. It started in January and went to like end of April maybe or something.
But apparently did about 1,000 flights.
Yeah, Tony and his brother, Roger, I think was the other pilot. Maybe there was another, and they did pilot training here, Will told me.
Mm-hmm.
But it never came back.
No, never came. Well, Tony Janus, he was killed, I believe, within the next year training the Russian military.
Yeah,
in
it was the
Baltics,
the start of World War
One. Like yeah, pretty wild. Pretty wild story.
You know, but his name lives on. And this is a fantastic thing that we're getting. I'm looking out the studio window now, and I can kind of see the edge of the pier. So I can almost see where it's going. Just for the folks at home who maybe are not seeing the visuals that are going with this, It's right outside the restaurant there?
It's near Doc Ford's. It's on the pier approach, the south side of the pier approach, just to the west of Doc Ford's. And it's right at the opening of the yacht basin. So it's on the north side of the yacht basin.
Sure, sure, absolutely.
There's a little triangular plaza, and it's going to be really nice. It's not just the sculpture. The sculpture has a very nice presence to it, but there's tons of bronze plaques that have historical information and that kind of stuff that help inform people as to what it is that they're seeing and why it's important.
Interesting that you call it a sculpture. I mean, the first thing I thought of was that, because I have no idea how you do what you do, and I don't really want to know how the sausage is made, as they say. But it occurred to me that a sculpture is, you know, something you, did you sort of make a hard version first and then take impressions of that? Or is that all kinds of different?
That's certainly one notion of what sculpture is or can
be. So you see how
be.
Much I know, which is
so,
nothing.
You know, it's in Germany, I think they call it the plastic arts. So it's anything that can be formed or manipulated into three-dimensional voluminous mass. So, you know, there's a lot of metal fabrication that is sculpture. But what you're thinking of is casting process, like bronze.
Okay.
Where you make a pattern out of clay.
Isn't that how you did Tony and Abe, though?
Yeah, yeah.
Because we did a Catalyst Sessions, and you showed me.
Yep.
I remember that. And then you would just make a cast and pour bronze into that?
So, yeah, you pull a mold off of that. So you have a negative, and then you pour wax into that mold, and then you take that wax and you invest it into, nowadays it's a ceramic shell. Then you melt the wax out and you have this hollow that is the absence of the wax. And then you pour molten bronze into that hollow. In a nutshell, that's how
that's the plastic arts, as they say in Germany. Just to finish up here, this has been pretty much a six-year project for you.
Well, you know, I can't say that I've devoted all of my time for 6 years to it, but I have been involved in the project for 6 years. And the actual fabrication, let's see, I believe we signed a contract in December of last year, and we finalized technical drawings and began fabrication in February of last year. So it's been 10 months of fabrication. It's a very, very involved technical project. The real creative aspect of this particular piece, because we're trying to replicate another design.
Yeah.
The creative aspect of this is in the problem solving, you know, how to make it work, how to make it look good, how to make it as realistic as possible.
Well, let's give a quick shout out to your team because we see them on social media. You know, I've been seeing a lot of photos of the thing in your parking lot.
Yeah, and- you know, to quote Hillary Clinton, it takes a village to make a sculpture of this scale and magnitude. It definitely takes a crew of people, and I've got a great group working at MGA with me. I'm going to hold off on naming everybody's name because you put me on the spot and I'll forget somebody. And then they'll get, I'll get ridiculed. So.
Understood. Well, hopefully they'll be in the video that you guys are watching when you're listening to this. It's all being done on the fly, folks. But Mark Ehling, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to tell us about this.
It's always a joy hanging out and talking with you.
I feel exactly the same way. Take care, buddy.